The buzz from the hunters was one of admiration at this handsome behaviour. Clearly they were of the opinion that Jack had done the decent thing, had put himself in the right by his generous apology, and Ralph obscurely in the wrong. They waited for an appropriately decent answer. Yet Ralph's throat refused to pass one. He resented as an addition to Jack's misbehaviour this verbal trick. The fire was dead, the ship was gone. Could they not see? Anger instead of decency passed his throat. That was a dirty trick. They were silent on the mountain top, while the opaque look appeared in Jack's eyes and passed away. Ralph's final word was an ungracious mutter. All right. Light the fire. With some positive action before them, a little of the tension died. Ralph said no more, did nothing, stood looking down at the ashes round his feet. Jack was loud and active. He gave orders, sang, whistled, threw remarks at the silent Ralph, remarks that did not need an answer and therefore could not invite a snub. And still Ralph was silent. No one, not even Jack, would ask him to move, and in the end they had to build the fire 3 yards away, and in a place not really as convenient. So Ralph asserted his chieftainship, and could not have chosen a better way if he had thought for days. Against this weapon so indefinable and so effective, Jack was powerless and raged without knowing why. By the time the pile was built, they were on different sides of a high barrier. When they had dealt with the fire, another crisis arose. Jack had no means of lighting it. Then, to his surprise, Ralph went to Piggy and took the glasses from him. Not even Ralph knew how a link between him and Jack had been snapped and fastened elsewhere. I'll bring 'em back. I'll come too. Piggy stood behind him, islanded in a sea of meaningless colour, while Ralph knelt and focused the glossy spot. Instantly the fire was alight, Piggy held out his hands and grabbed the glasses back. Before these fantastically attractive flowers of violet and red and yellow, unkindness melted away. They became a circle of boys round a campfire, and even Piggy and Ralph were half drawn in. Soon some of the boys were rushing down the slope for more wood, while Jack hacked the pig. They tried holding the whole carcass on a stake over the fire, but the steak burnt more quickly than the pig roasted. In the end, they skewered bits of meat on branches and held them in the flames, and even then almost as much boy was roasted as meat. Ralph dribbled. He meant to refuse meat, but his past diet of fruit and nuts with an odd crab or fish gave him too little resistance. He accepted a piece of half-raw meat and gnawed it like a wolf. Piggy spoke, also dribbling. "Aren't I having none?" Jack had meant to leave him in doubt as an assertion of power, but Piggy, by advertising his omission, made more cruelty necessary. "You didn't hunt." "No more did Ralph," said Piggy wetly, "nor Simon." He amplified. "There isn't more than an apeth of meat in a crab." Ralph stirred uneasily. Simon, sitting between the twins and Piggy, wiped his mouth and shoved his piece of meat over the rocks to Piggy, who grabbed it. The twins giggled, and Simon lowered his face in shame. Then Jack leapt to his feet, slashed off a great hunk of meat, and flung it down at Simon's feet. "Eat, damn you!" he glared at Simon. "Take it!" He spun on his heel, centre of a bewildered circle of boys. "I got you meat!" Numberless and inexpressible frustrations combined to make his rage elemental and awe-inspiring. "I painted my face. I stole up. Now you eat, all of you. And I..." Slowly the silence on the mountain top deepened till the click of the fire and the soft hiss of roasting meat could be heard clearly. Jack looked round for understanding, but found only respect. Ralph stood among the ashes of the signal fire, his hands full of meat, saying nothing. Then at last Morris broke the silence. He changed the subject to the only one that could bring the majority of them together. "Where did you find the pig?" Roger pointed down the unfriendly side. "They were there, by the sea." Jack, recovering, could not bear to have his story told. He broke in quickly. We spread round. I crept on hands and knees. The spears fell out because they hadn't barbs on. The pig ran away and made an awful noise. It turned back and ran into the circle, bleeding. All the boys were talking at once, relieved and excited. We closed in. The first blow had paralysed its hindquarters, so then the circle could close in and beat and beat. I cut the pig's throat. The twins, still sharing their identical grin, jumped up and ran round each other. Then the rest joined in, making pig-dying noises and shouting. One for his knob. Give him a fourpenny one. Then Morris pretended to be the pig and ran squealing into the centre, and the hunters, circling still, pretended to beat him. As they danced, they sang, "Kill the pig, cut her throat, bash her in." Ralph watched them, envious and resentful. Not till they flagged and the chant died away did he speak. "I'm calling an assembly." One by one they halted and stood watching him. "With the conch, I'm calling a meeting, even if we have to go on into the dark, down on the platform, when I blow it, now." He turned away and walked off down the mountain.
Chapter 5. Beast from Water. The tide was coming in, and there was only a narrow strip of firm beach between the water and the white, stumbling stuff near the palm terrace. Ralph chose the firm strip as a path because he needed to think, and only here could he allow his feet to move without having to watch them. Suddenly, pacing by the water, he was overcome with astonishment. He found himself understanding the wearisomeness of this life, where every path was an improvisation, and a considerable part of one's waking life was spent watching one's feet. He stopped, facing the strip, and remembering that first enthusiastic exploration as though it were part of a brighter childhood, he smiled jeeringly. He turned then and walked back towards the platform with the sun in his face. The time had come for the assembly, and as he walked into the concealing splendours of the sunlight, he went carefully over the points of his speech. There must be no mistake about this assembly, no chasing imaginary... He lost himself in a maze of thoughts that were rendered vague by his lack of words to express them. Frowning, he tried again. This meeting must not be fun, but business. At that he walked faster, aware all at once of urgency and the declining sun, and a little wind created by his speed that breathed about his face. This wind pressed his grey shirt against his chest, so that he noticed in this new mood of comprehension how the folds were stiff like cardboard and unpleasant. Noticed, too, how the frayed edges of his shorts were making an uncomfortable pink area on the front of his thighs. With a convulsion of the mind, Ralph discovered dirt and decay, understood how much he disliked perpetually flicking the tangled hair out of his eyes, and at last, when the sun was gone, rolling noisily to rest among dry leaves. At that he began to trot. The beach near the bathing pool was dotted with groups of boys waiting for the assembly. They made way for him silently, conscious of his grim mood and the fault at the fire. The place of assembly in which he stood was roughly a triangle, but irregular and sketchy like everything they made. First there was the log on which he himself sat, a dead tree that must have been quite exceptionally big for the platform. Perhaps one of those legendary storms of the Pacific had shifted it here. This palm trunk lay parallel to the beach, so that when Ralph sat he faced the island, but to the boys was a darkish figure against the shimmer of the lagoon. The two sides of the triangle of which the log was base were less evenly defined. On the right was a log polished by restless seats along the top, but not so large as the chief's and not so comfortable. On the left were four small logs, one of them, the furthest, lamentably springy. Assembly after assembly had broken up in laughter when someone had leaned too far back and the log had whipped and thrown half a dozen boys backwards into the grass. Yet now, he saw, no one had had the wit, not himself, nor Jack, nor Piggy, to bring a stone and wedge the thing. So they would continue enduring the ill-balanced twister because... Again he lost himself in deep waters. Grass was worn away in front of each trunk, but grew tall and untrodden in the centre of the triangle. Then at the apex the grass was thick again, because no one sat there. All round the place of assembly the grey trunks rose, straight or leaning, and supported the low roof of leaves. On two sides was the beach, behind the lagoon, in front the darkness of the island. Ralph turned to the chief's seat. They had never had an assembly as late before. That was why the place looked so different. Normally, the underside of the green roof was lit by a tangle of golden reflections, and their faces were lit upside down like, thought Ralph, when you hold an electric torch in your hands. But now the sun was slanting in at one side, so that the shadows were where they ought to be. Again he fell into that strange mood of speculation that was so foreign to him. If faces were different when lit from above or below, what was a face? What was anything? Ralph moved impatiently. The trouble was, if you were a chief, you had to think, you had to be wise. And then the occasion slipped by, so that you had to grab at a decision. This made you think, because thought was a valuable thing that got results. Only, decided Ralph as he faced the chief's seat, I can't think, not like Piggy. Once more that evening, Ralph had to adjust his values. Piggy could think. He could go step by step inside that fat head of his, only Piggy was no chief. But Piggy, for all his ludicrous body, had brains. Ralph was a specialist in thought now, and could recognize thought in another. The sun in his eyes reminded him how time was passing. So he took the conch down from the tree and examined the surface. Exposure to the air had bleached the yellow and pink to near white and transparency. Ralph felt a kind of affectionate reverence for the conch, even though he had fished the thing out of the lagoon himself. He faced the place of assembly and put the conch to his lips. The others were waiting for this and came straight away. Those who were aware that a ship had passed the island while the fire was out were subdued by the thought of Ralph's anger, while those, including the Littlans, who did not know, were impressed by the general air of solemnity. The place of assembly filled quickly. Jack, Simon, Morris, most of the hunters on Ralph's right, the rest on the left, under the sun. Piggy came and stood outside the triangle. This indicated that he wished to listen but would not speak, and Piggy intended it as a gesture of disapproval. "The thing is, we need an assembly." No one said anything, but the faces turned to Ralph were intent. He flourished the conch. He had learnt, as a practical business, that fundamental statements like this had to be said at least twice before everyone understood them. One had to sit, attracting all eyes to the conch, and drop words like heavy, round stones among the little groups that crouched or squatted. He was searching his mind for simple words, so that even the Littlans would understand what the assembly was about. Later, perhaps, practiced debaters, Jack, Morris, Piggy, would use their whole art to twist the meeting. But now, at the beginning, the subject of the debate must be laid out clearly. "We need an assembly, not for fun, not for laughing and falling off the log." The group of Littlans on the twister giggled and looked at each other. "Not for making jokes or for..." He lifted the conch in an effort to find the compelling word. "For cleverness... Not for these things, but to put things straight." He paused for a moment. "I've been along. By myself I went, thinking what's what. I know what we need, an assembly to put things straight. And first of all, I'm speaking." He paused for a moment and automatically pushed back his hair. Piggy tiptoed to the triangle, his ineffectual protest made, and joined the others. Ralph went on. "We have lots of assemblies. Everybody enjoys speaking and being together. We decide things, but they don't get done. We were going to have water brought from the stream and left in those coconut shells under fresh leaves. So it was for a few days. Now there's no water. The shells are dry. People drink from the river. There was a murmur of assent. Not that there's anything wrong with drinking from the river. I mean, I'd sooner have water from that place, you know, the pool where the waterfall is, than out of an old coconut shell. Only we said we'd have the water brought, and now not. There were only two full shells there this afternoon. He licked his lips. Then there's huts, shelters. The murmur swelled again and died away. You mostly sleep in shelters. Tonight, except for Sam and Eric up by the fire, you'll all sleep there. Who built the shelters? Clamour rose at once. Everyone had built the shelters. Ralph had to wave the conch once more. Wait a minute. I mean, who built all three? We all built the first one, four of us the second one, and me and Simon built the last one over there. That's why it's so tottery. No, don't laugh. That shelter might fall down if the rain comes back. We'll need those shelters then. He paused and cleared his throat. There's another thing. We chose those rocks right along beyond the bathing pool as a lavatory. That was sensible, too. The tide cleans the place up. You Litlands know about that. There were sniggers here and there and swift glances. No people seem to use anywhere, even near the shelters and the platform. You Litlands, when you're getting fruit, if you're taken short... The assembly roared. I said, if you're taken short, you keep away from the fruit. That's dirty. Laughter rose again. I said, that's dirty. He plucked at his stiff, grey shirt. That's really dirty. If you're taken short, you go right along the beach to the rocks. See? Piggy held out his hands for the conch, but Ralph shook his head. This speech was planned point by point. We've all got to use the rocks again. This place is getting dirty. He paused. The assembly, sensing a crisis, was tensely expectant. And then, about the fire. Ralph let out his spare breath with a little gasp that was echoed by his audience. Jack started to chip a piece of wood with his knife and whispered something to Robert, who looked away. The fire is the most important thing on the island. How can we ever be rescued except by luck if we don't keep a fire going? Is a fire too much for us to make? He flung out an arm. Look at us. How many are we? And yet we can't keep a fire going to make smoke. Don't you understand? Can't you see we ought to die before we let the fire out? There was a self-conscious giggling among the hunters. Ralph turned on them passionately. You hunters, you can laugh. But I tell you, the smoke is more important than the pig, however often you kill one. Do all of you see? He spread his arms wide and turned to the whole triangle. We've got to make smoke up there or die. He paused, feeling for his next point. And another thing. Someone called out, too many things. There came mutters of agreement. Ralph overrode them. And another thing. We nearly set the whole island on fire, and we waste time rolling rocks and making little cooking fires. Now I say this, and make it a rule, because I'm chief. We won't have a fire anywhere but on the mountain, ever. There was a row immediately. Boys stood up and shouted, and Ralph shouted back, because if you want a fire to cook fish or crab, you can jolly well go up the mountain. That way we'll be certain. Hands were reaching for the conch in the light of the setting sun. He held on and leapt on the trunk. All this I meant to say. Now I've said it. You voted me for chief. Now you do what I say. They quietened slowly and at last were seated again. Ralph dropped down and spoke in his ordinary voice. So remember, the rocks for a lavatory, keep the fire going and smoke showing as a signal. Don't take fire from the mountain. Take your food up there. Jack stood up, scowling in the gloom, and held out his hands. I haven't finished yet, but you've talked and talked. I've got the conch. Jack sat down, grumbling. Then the last thing. This is what people can talk about. He waited till the platform was very still. Things are breaking up. I don't understand why. We began well, we were happy. And then, he moved the conch gently, looking beyond them at nothing, remembering the beastie, the snake, the fire, the talk of fear. Then people started getting frightened. A murmur, almost a moan, rose and passed away. Jack had stopped whittling. Ralph went on abruptly. But that's Litland's talk. We'll get that straight. So the last part, the bit we can all talk about, is kind of deciding on the fear. The hair was creeping into his eyes again. We've got to talk about this fear and decide there's nothing in it. I'm frightened myself sometimes, only that's nonsense, like bogies. Then when we've decided, we can start again and be careful about things like the fire. A picture of three boys walking along the bright beach flitted through his mind. And be happy. Ceremonially, Ralph laid the conch on the trunk beside him as a sign that the speech was over. What sunlight reached them was level. Jack stood up and took the conch. So this is a meeting to find out what's what. I'll tell you what's what. You Litland started all this with a fear talk. Beasts? Where from? Of course we're frightened sometimes, but we put up with being frightened. Only Ralph says you scream in the night. What does that mean but nightmares? Anyway, you don't hunt or build or help. You're a lot of crybabies and sissies, that's what. And as for the fear, you'll have to put up with that like the rest of us. Ralph looked at Jack open-mouthed, but Jack took no notice. The thing is, fear can't hurt you any more than a dream. There aren't any beasts to be afraid of on this island. He looked along the row of whispering Litlands. Serve you right if something did get you, you useless lot of crybabies. But there is no animal. Ralph interrupted him testily. What is all this? Who said anything about an animal? You did, the other day. You said they dream and cry out. Now they talk. Not only the Litlands, but my hunters sometimes talk of a thing, a dark thing, a beast, some sort of animal. I've heard. You thought not, didn't you? Now listen, you don't get big animals on small islands, only pigs. You only get lions and tigers in big countries like Africa and India and the zoo. I've got the conch. I'm not talking about the fear. I'm talking about the beast. Be frightened, if you like, but as for the beast... Jack paused, cradling the conch, and turned to his hunters with their dirty black caps. Am I a hunter, or am I not? They nodded simply. He was a hunter, all right. No one doubted that. Well then, I've been all over this island, by myself. If there were a beast, I'd have seen it. Be frightened because you're like that, but there's no beast in the forest. Jack handed back the conch and sat down. The whole assembly applauded him with relief. Then Piggy held out his hand. I don't agree with all Jack said, but with some. Of course there isn't a beast in the forest. How could there be? What would a beast eat? Pig. We eat pig. Piggy. I got the conch, said Piggy indignantly. Ralph, they ought to shut up, oughtn't they? You shut up, you Litlands. What I mean is that I don't agree about this here fear. Of course there isn't nothing to be afraid of in the forest. Why, I've been there myself. You'll be talking about ghosts and such things next. We know what goes on, and if there's something wrong, there's someone to put it right. He took off his glasses and blinked at them. The sun had gone as if the light had been turned off. He proceeded to explain. If you get a pain in your stomach, whether it's a little one or a big one, yours is a big one. When you're done laughing, perhaps we can get on with the meeting. And if them Litlands climb back on the twister again, they'll only fall off in a sec, so they might as well sit on the ground and listen. No, you have doctors for everything, even the inside of your mind. You don't really mean that we got to be frightened all the time of nothing. Life, said Piggy expansively, is scientific, that's what it is. In a year or two, when the war's over, they'll be travelling to Mars and back. I know there isn't no beast, not with claws and all that, I mean. And I know there isn't no fear, either. Piggy paused. Unless... Ralph moved restlessly. "Unless what?" "Unless we get frightened of people." A sound, half laugh, half jeer, rose among the seated boys. Piggy ducked his head and went on hastily. "So let's hear from that little un who talked about a beast, and perhaps we can show him how silly he is." The little uns began to jabber among themselves. Then one stood forward. "What's your name?" "Phil." For a little un, he was self-confident, holding out his hands, cradling the conch as Ralph did, looking round at them to collect their attention before he spoke. "Last night I had a dream, a horrid dream, fighting with things. I was outside the shelter by myself, fighting with things, those twisty things in the trees." He paused, and the other little uns laughed in horrified sympathy. "Then I was frightened, and I woke up, and I was outside the shelter by myself in the dark, and the twisty things had gone away." The vivid horror of this, so possible and so nakedly terrifying, held them all silent. The child's voice went piping on from behind the white conch. "And I was frightened and started to call out for Ralph, and then I saw something moving among the trees, something big and horrid." He paused, half frightened by the recollection, yet proud of the sensation he was creating. "That was a nightmare," said Ralph. "He was walking in his sleep." The assembly murmured in subdued agreement. The little un shook his head stubbornly. "I was asleep when the twisty things were fighting, and when they went away I was awake, and I saw something big and horrid moving in the trees." Ralph held out his hands for the conch, and the little un sat down. "You were asleep. There wasn't anyone there. How could anyone be wandering about in the forest at night? Was anyone? Did anyone go out?" There was a long pause while the assembly grinned at the thought of anyone going out in the darkness. Then Simon stood up, and Ralph looked at him in astonishment. "You? What were you mucking about in the dark for?" Simon grabbed the conch convulsively. "I wanted to go to a place I know." "What place?" "Just a place I know. A place in the jungle." He hesitated. Jack settled the question for them with that contempt in his voice that could sound so funny and so final. He was taken short. With a feeling of humiliation on Simon's behalf, Ralph took back the conch, looking Simon sternly in the face as he did so. "Well, don't do it again, understand? Not at night. There's enough silly talk about beasts, without the little un seeing you gliding about like a..." The derisive laughter that rose had fear in it and condemnation. Simon opened his mouth to speak, but Ralph had the conch, so he backed to his seat. When the assembly was silent, Ralph turned to Piggy. "Well, Piggy?" "There was another one, him." The little uns pushed Percival forward and then left him by himself. He stood knee-deep in the central grass, looking at his hidden feet, trying to pretend he was in a tent. Ralph remembered another small boy who had stood like this, and he flinched away from the memory. He had pushed the thought down and out of sight, where only some positive reminder like this could bring it to the surface. There had been no further numberings of the little uns, partly because there was no means of ensuring that all of them were accounted for, and partly because Ralph knew the answer to at least one question Piggy had asked on the mountain top. There were little boys, fair, dark, freckled, and all dirty, but their faces were all dreadfully free of major blemishes. No one had seen the mulberry-coloured birthmark again. At that time Piggy had coaxed and bullied. Tacitly admitting that he remembered the unmentionable, Ralph nodded to Piggy. "Go on, ask him." Piggy knelt, holding the conch. "Now then, what's your name?" The small boy twisted away into his tent. Piggy turned helplessly to Ralph, who spoke sharply. "What's your name?" Tormented by the silence and the refusal, the assembly broke into a chant. "What's your name? What's your name? Quiet!" Ralph peered at the child in the twilight. "Now tell us. What's your name?" "Percival Weems Madison, the Vicarage, Harcourt St. Anthony, Hants, telephone, telephone, telly..." As if this information was rooted far down in the springs of sorrow, the little un wept, His face puckered, the tears leapt from his eyes, his mouth opened till they could see a square black hole. At first he was a silent effigy of sorrow, but then the lamentation rose out of him loud and sustained as the conch. "Shut up, you, shut up!" Percival Weems' medicine would not shut up. A spring had been tapped far beyond the reach of authority or even physical intimidation. The crying went on, breath after breath, and seemed to sustain him upright as if he were nailed to it. "Shut up! Shut up!" For now the little ones were no longer silent. They were reminded of their personal sorrows and perhaps felt themselves to share in a sorrow that was universal. They began to cry in sympathy, two of them almost as loud as Percival. Morris saved them. He cried out, "Look at me!" He pretended to fall over. He rubbed his rump and sat on the twister so that he fell in the grass. He clowned badly, but Percival and the others noticed and sniffed and laughed. Presently they were all laughing so absurdly that the big uns joined in. Jack was the first to make himself heard. He had not got the conch and thus spoke against the rules, but nobody minded. "And what about the beast?" Something strange was happening to Percival. He yawned and staggered, so that Jack seized and shook him. "Where does the beast live?" Percival sagged in Jack's grip. "That's a clever beast," said Piggy, jeering, "if it can hide on this island. Jack's been everywhere. Where could a beast live? Beast my foot!" Percival muttered something, and the assembly laughed again. Ralph leaned forward. "What does he say?" Jack listened to Percival's answer, and then let go of him. Percival, released, surrounded by the comfortable presence of humans, fell in the long grass and went to sleep. Jack cleared his throat, then reported casually, "He says the beast comes out of the sea." The last laugh died away. Ralph turned involuntarily, a black humped figure against the lagoon. The assembly looked with him, considered the vast stretches of water, the high sea beyond, unknown indigo of infinite possibility, heard silently the sough and whisper from the reef. Morris spoke so loudly that they jumped. "Daddy says they haven't found all the animals in the sea yet." Argument started again. Ralph held out the glimmering conch and Morris took it obediently. The meeting subsided. "I mean, when Jack says you can be frightened because people are frightened anyway, that's all right. But when he says there's only pigs on this island, I expect he's right, but he doesn't know. Not really, not certainly, I mean." Morris took a breath. "My daddy says there are things, what you call them, that make ink. Squids, that are hundreds of yards long and eat whales whole." He paused again and laughed gaily. "I don't believe in the beast, of course. As Piggy says, life's scientific. But we don't know, do we? Not certainly, I mean." Someone shouted. "A squid couldn't come up out of the water. Could. Couldn't." In a moment the platform was full of arguing, gesticulating shadows. To Ralph, seated, this seemed the breaking up of sanity. Fear, beasts, no general agreement that the fire was all important. And when one tried to get the thing straight, the argument sheared off, bringing up fresh, unpleasant matter. He could see a whiteness in the gloom near him, so he grabbed it from Morris and blew as loudly as he could. The assembly was shocked into silence. Simon was close to him, laying hands on the conch. Simon felt a perilous necessity to speak, but to speak in assembly was a terrible thing to him. "Maybe," he said hesitantly, "maybe there is a beast." The assembly cried out savagely, and Ralph stood up in amazement. "You, Simon? You believe in this?" "I don't know," said Simon. His heartbeats were choking him, but the storm broke. "Sit down, shut up, take the conch. Sod you, shut up," Ralph shouted. "Hear him, he's got the conch." "What I mean is, maybe it's only us. Nuts." That was from Piggy, shocked out of decorum. Simon went on. "We could be sort of..." Simon became inarticulate in his effort to express mankind's essential illness. Inspiration came to him. "What's the dirtiest thing there is?" As an answer, Jack dropped into the uncomprehending silence that followed it, the one crude expressive syllable. Release was like an orgasm. Those little uns who had climbed back on the twister fell off again and did not mind. The hunters were screaming with delight. Simon's effort fell about him in ruins. The laughter beat him cruelly, and he shrank away defenceless to his seat. At last the assembly was silent again. Someone spoke out of turn. "Maybe he means it's some sort of ghost." Ralph lifted the conch and peered into the gloom. The lightest thing was the pale beach. Surely the Littlans were nearer. Yes, there was no doubt about it. They were huddled into a tight knot of bodies in the central grass. A flurry of wind made the palms talk, and the noise seemed very loud now that darkness and silence made it so noticeable. Two grey trunks rubbed each other with an evil squeaking that no one had noticed by day. Piggy took the conch out of his hands. His voice was indignant. "I don't believe in no ghosts, ever." Jack was up, too, unaccountably angry. "Who cares what you believe? Fatty!" I got the conch. There was the sound of a brief tussle, and the conch moved to and fro. "You give me the conch back!" Ralph pushed between them and got a thump on the chest. He wrested the conch from someone and sat down breathlessly. "There's too much talk about ghosts. We ought to have left all this for daylight." A hushed and anonymous voice broke in. "Perhaps that's what the beast is, a ghost." The assembly was shaken as by a wind. "There's too much talking out of turn," Ralph said, "because we can't have proper assemblies if you don't stick to the rules." He stopped again. The careful plan of this assembly had broken down. "What do you want me to say, then?" "I was wrong to call this assembly so late. We'll have a vote on them, on ghosts, I mean, and then go to the shelters because we're all tired." "No, Jack, is it? Wait a minute. I'll say here and now that I don't believe in ghosts. Or I don't think I do, but I don't like the thought of them. Not now, that is, in the dark. But we were going to decide what's what." He raised the conch for a moment. "Very well, then. I suppose what's what is whether there are ghosts or not." He thought for a moment, formulating the question. "Who thinks there may be ghosts?" For a long time there was silence and no apparent movement. Then Ralph peered into the gloom and made out the hands. He spoke flatly. "I see." The world, that understandable and lawful world, was slipping away. Once there was this and that, and now, and the ship had gone. The conch was snatched from his hands, and Piggy's voice shrilled, "I didn't vote for no ghosts." He whirled round on the assembly. "Remember that, all of you," they heard him stamp. "What are we, humans, or animals, or savages? What's grown-ups going to think? Going off hunting pigs, letting fires out, and now..." A shadow fronted him tempestuously. "You shut up, you fat slug." There was a moment's struggle, and the glimmering conch jigged up and down. Ralph leapt to his feet. "Jack, Jack, you haven't got the conch. Let him speak." Jack's face swam near him. "And you shut up. Who are you anyway, sitting there, telling people what to do? You can't hunt. You can't sing." "I'm chief. I was chosen." "Why should choosing make any difference? Just giving orders that don't make any sense." "Piggy's got the conch." "That's right. Favour Piggy, as you always do." "Jack!" Jack's voice sounded in bitter mimicry. "Jack! Jack!" "The rules!" shouted Ralph. "You're breaking the rules." "Who cares?" Ralph summoned his wits. "Because the rules are the only thing we've got." But Jack was shouting against him. "Bollocks to the rules. We're strong. We hunt. If there's a beast, we'll hunt it down. We'll close in and beat and beat and beat." He gave a wild whoop and leapt down to the pale sand. At once the platform was full of noise and excitement, scrambling, screams and laughter. The assembly shredded away and became a discursive and random scatter from the palms to the water and away along the beach beyond night sight. Ralph found his cheek touching the conch and took it from Piggy. "What's grown-ups going to say?" cried Piggy again. "Look at 'em!" The sound of mock hunting, hysterical laughter, and real terror came from the beach. "Blow the conch, Ralph!" Piggy was so close that Ralph could see the glint of his one glass. There's the fire. Can't they see? You've got to be tough now. Make 'em do what you want. Ralph answered in the cautious voice of one who rehearses a theorem. If I blow the conch and they don't come back, then we've had it. We shan't keep the fire going. We'll be like animals. We'll never be rescued. If you don't blow, we'll soon be animals anyway. I can't see what they're doing, but I can hear. The dispersed figures had come together on the sand and were a dense black mass that revolved. They were chanting something, and little ones that had had enough were staggering away, howling. Ralph raised the conch to his lips, then lowered it. The trouble is, are there ghosts, Biggie? Or beasts? Of course there aren't. Why not? Because things wouldn't make sense. Houses and streets and TV, they wouldn't work. The dancing, chanting boys had worked themselves away, till their sound was nothing but a wordless rhythm. But suppose they don't make sense, not here on this island. Supposing things are watching us and waiting. Ralph shuddered violently and moved closer to Piggy so that they bumped frighteningly. You stop talking like that. We got enough trouble, Ralph, and I've had as much as I can stand. If there is ghosts, I ought to give up being chief. Hear 'em. Oh, Lord, no. Piggy gripped Ralph's arm. If Jack was chief, he'd have all hunting and no fire. We'd be here till we died. His voice ran up to a squeak. Who's that sitting there?
Me. Simon. Fat lot of good we are, said Ralph. Three blind mice. I'll give up.
If you give up, said Piggy in an appalled whisper, what had happened to me?
Nothing.
He hates me. I don't know why. If he could do what he wanted, you're all right. He respects you. Besides, you did him.
You were having a nice fight with him just now.
I had the conch, said Piggy simply. I had a right to speak.
Simon stirred in the dark.
Go on being chief.
You shut up, young Simon. Why couldn't you say there wasn't a beast?
I'm scared of him, said Piggy. That's why I know him.
If you're scared of someone, you hate him, but you can't stop thinking about him. You kid yourself he's all right, really, and then when you see him again, it's like asthma and you can't breathe. I'll tell you what, he hates you too, Ralph.
Me? Why me?
I don't know. You got him over the fire, and you're chief, and he isn't.
But he's...
Jack married you. I've been in bed so much, I've done some thinking. I know about people. I know about me. And him. He can't hurt you, but if you stand out of the way, he'd hurt the next thing. And that's me.
Biggie's right, Ralph. There's you and Jack. Go on being chief.
We're all drifting, and things are going rotten. At home, there was always a grown-up. Please, sir, please, miss, and then you got an answer. How I wish. I wish my auntie was here. I wish my father... Oh, what's the use?
Keep the fire going.
The dance was over. The hunters were going back to the shelters. Grown-ups know things, said Piggy. They ain't afraid of the dark. They'd meet and have tea and discuss. Then things would be all right. They wouldn't set fire to the island or lose. They'd build a ship. The three boys stood in the darkness, striving unsuccessfully to convey the majesty of adult life. They wouldn't quarrel, or break my specs, or talk about a beast. If only they could get a message to us, cried Ralph desperately. If only they could send us something grown up, a sign or something. A thin wail out of the darkness chilled them and set them grabbing for each other. Then the wail rose, remote and unearthly, and turned to an inarticulate gibbering. Percival Weems Madison, of the vicarage Harcourt St. Anthony, lying in the long grass, was living through circumstances in which the incantation of his address was powerless to help him. Chapter 6. Beast from Air. There was no light left save that of the stars. When they had understood what made this ghostly noise and Percival was quiet again, Ralph and Simon picked him up unhandily and carried him to a shelter. Piggy hung about near for all his brave words, and the three bigger boys went together to the next shelter. They lay restlessly and noisily among the dry leaves, watching the patch of stars that was the opening towards the lagoon.
Sometimes a little un cried out from the other shelters, and once a big un spoke in the dark. Then they too fell asleep. A sliver of moon rose over the horizon, hardly large enough to make a path of light even when it set right down on the water. But there were other lights in the sky that moved fast, winked or went out, though not even a faint popping came down from the battle fought at 10 miles height. But a sign came down from the world of grown-ups, though at the time there was no child awake to read it. There was a sudden bright explosion and a corkscrew trail across the sky, then darkness again and stars. There was a speck above the island, a figure dropping swiftly beneath the parachute, a figure that hung with dangling limbs. The changing winds of various altitudes took the figure where they would. Then, 3 miles up, the wind steadied and bore it in a descending curve round the sky and swept it in a great slant across the reef and the lagoon towards the mountain. The figure fell and crumpled among the blue flowers of the mountain side. But now there was a gentle breeze at this height too, and the parachute flopped and banged and pulled. So the figure, with feet that dragged behind it, slid up the mountain. Yard by yard, puff by puff, the breeze hauled the figure through the blue flowers, over the boulders and red stones, till it lay huddled among the shattered rocks of the mountain top. Here the breeze was fitful, and allowed the strings of the parachute to tangle and festoon, and the figure sat, its helmeted head between its knees, held by a complication of lines. When the breeze blew, the lines would strain taut, and some accident of this pull lifted the head and chest upright, so that the figure seemed to peer across the brow of the mountain. Then each time the wind dropped, the lines would slacken, and the figure bow forward again, sinking its head between its knees. So as the stars moved across the sky, the figure sat on the mountain top and bowed and sank and bowed again. In the darkness of early morning there were noises by a rock a little way down the side of the mountain. Two boys rolled out of a pile of brushwood and dead leaves, two dim shadows talking sleepily to each other. They were the twins on duty at the fire. In theory, one should have been asleep and one on watch, but they can never manage to do things sensibly if that meant acting independently, and since staying awake all night was impossible, they had both gone to sleep. Now they approached the darker smudge that had been the signal fire, yawning, rubbing their eyes, treading with practiced feet. When they reached it, they stopped yawning, and one ran quickly back for brushwood and leaves. The other knelt down. "I believe it's out." He fiddled with the sticks that were pushed into his hands. "No." He lay down and put his lips close to the smudge and blew softly. His face appeared lit redly. He stopped blowing for a moment. "Sam, give us tinderwood." Eric bent down and blew softly again till the patch was bright. Sam poked the piece of tinderwood into the hot spot, then a branch. The glow increased and the branch took fire. Sam piled on more branches. "Don't burn the lot," said Eric. "You're putting on too much. Let's warm up. We'll only have to fetch more wood. I'm cold." "So am I. Besides, it's dark, all right then." Eric squatted back and watched Sam make up the fire. He built a little tent of dead wood, and the fire was safely alight. That was near. He'd have been waxy. For a few moments, the twins watched the fire in silence. Then Eric sniggered. "Wasn't he waxy? About the fire and the pig. Lucky he went for Jack instead of us. Remember old Waxy at school? Boy, you are driving me slowly insane." The twins shared their identical laughter, then remembered the darkness and other things and glanced round uneasily. The flames, busy about the tent, drew their eyes back again. Eric watched the scurrying woodlice that were so frantically unable to avoid the flames and thought of the first fire, just down there on the steeper side of the mountains, where now was complete darkness. He did not like to remember it, and looked away at the mountain top. Warmth radiated now and beat pleasantly on them. Sam amused himself by fitting branches into the fire as closely as possible. Eric spread out his hands, searching for the distance at which the heat was just bearable. Idly looking beyond the fire, he resettled the scattered rocks from their flat shadows into daylight contours. Just there was the big rock, and the three stones there, that split rock, and there beyond was the gap. Just there... Sam? Nothing. The flames were mastering the branches. The bark was curling and falling away, the wood exploding. The tent fell inwards and flung a wide circle of light over the mountain top. Sam! 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 Sam looked at Eric irritably. The intensity of Eric's gaze made the direction in which he looked terrible, for Sam had his back to it. He scrambled round the fire, squatted by Eric, and looked to see. They became motionless, gripped in each other's arms, four unwinking eyes aimed and two mouths open. Far beneath them, the trees of the forest sighed, then roared. The hair on their foreheads fluttered, and flames blew out sideways from the fire. 15 yards away from them came the plopping noise of fabric blown open. Neither of the boys screamed, but the grip of their arms tightened and their mouths grew peaked. For perhaps 10 seconds they crouched like that, while the flailing fire sent smoke and sparks and waves of inconstant light over the top of the mountain. Then, as though they had but one terrified mind between them, they scrambled away over the rocks and fled. Ralph was dreaming. He had fallen asleep after what seemed hours of tossing and turning noisily among the dry leaves. Even the sounds of nightmare from the other shelters no longer reached him, for he was back where he came from, feeding the ponies with sugar over the garden wall. Then someone was shaking his arm and telling him that it was time for tea. "Ralph, wake up!" The leaves were roaring like the sea. "Ralph, wake up!" "What's the matter?" "We saw the beast, plain." "Who are you, the twins?" "We saw the beast." "Quiet, Piggy." The leaves were roaring still. Piggy bumped into him, and a twin grabbed him as he made for the oblong of paling stars. "You can't go out, it's horrible. Piggy, where are the spears?" "I can hear the..." "Quiet then, lie still." They lay there listening, at first with doubt, but then with terror, to the description the twins breathed at them between bouts of extreme silence. Soon the darkness was full of claws, full of the awful unknown and menace. An interminable dawn faded the stars out, and at last light, sad and grey, filtered into the shelter. They began to stir, though still the world outside the shelter was impossibly dangerous. The maze of the darkness sorted into near and far, and at the high point of the sky the cloudlets were warmed with colour. A single seabird flapped upwards with a hoarse cry that was echoed presently, and something squawked in the forest. Now streaks of cloud near the horizon began to glow rosily, and the feathery tops of the palms were green. Ralph knelt in the entrance to the shelter and peered cautiously round him. "Sam and Eric, call them to an assembly, quietly. Go on." The twins, holding tremulously to each other, dared the few yards to the next shelter and spread the dreadful news. Ralph stood up and walked for the sake of dignity, though with his back pricking, to the platform. Piggy and Simon followed him, and the other boys came sneaking after. Ralph took the conch from where it lay on the polished seat and held it to his lips. But then he hesitated and did not blow. He held the shell up instead and showed it to them, and they understood. The rays of the sun that were fanning upwards from below the horizon swung downwards to eye level. Ralph looked for a moment at the growing slice of gold that lit them from the right hand and seemed to make speech possible. The circle of boys before him bristled with hunting spears. He handed the conch to Eric, the nearest of the twins. "We've seen the beast with our own eyes. No, we weren't asleep." Sam took up the story.
By custom now, one conch did for both twins, for their substantial unity was recognized. It was furry. There was something moving behind its head. Wings. The beast moved, too. That was awful. It kind of sat up. The fire was bright. We just made it up. More sticks on. There were eyes, teeth, claws. We ran as fast as we could, bashed into things. The beast followed us. I saw it slinking behind the trees. Nearly touched me. Ralph pointed fearfully at Eric's face, which was striped with scars where the bushes had torn him. How did you do that? Eric felt his face. I'm all rough. Am I bleeding? The circle of boys shrank away in horror. Johnny, yawning still, burst into noisy tears and was slapped by Bill till he choked on them. The bright morning was full of threats and the circle began to change. It faced out rather than in, and the spears of sharpened wood were like a fence. Jack called them back to the center. This'll be a real hunt. Who'll come? Ralph moved impatiently. These spears are made of wood. Don't be silly. Jack sneered at him. Frightened? Of course I'm frightened. Who wouldn't be? He turned to the twins, yearning but hopeless. I suppose you aren't pulling our legs. The reply was too emphatic for anyone to doubt them. Piggy took the conch. Couldn't we kind of stay here? Maybe the beasts won't come near us. But for the sense of something watching them, Ralph would have shouted at him, "Stay here and be cramped into this bit of the island, always on the lookout. How shall we get our food, and what about the fire?" "Let's be moving," said Jack restlessly. "We're wasting time." "No, we're not. What about the little ones?" "Sucks to the little ones. Someone's got to look after them." "Nobody has so far." "There was no need. Now there is. Piggy'll look after them." "That's right. Keep Piggy out of danger." "Have some sense. What can Piggy do with only one eye?" The rest of the boys were looking from Jack to Ralph curiously. "And another thing. You can't have an ordinary hunt because the beast doesn't leave tracks. If it did, you'd have seen them. For all we know, the beast may swing through the trees like what's its name." They nodded. "So we've got to think." Piggy took off his damaged glasses and cleaned the remaining lens. "How about us, Ralph? You haven't got the conch here." "I mean, how about us? Suppose the beast comes when you're all away. I can't see proper, and if I get scared..." Jack broke in contemptuously. "You're always scared. I got the conch." "Conch! Conch!" shouted Jack. "We don't need the conch anymore. We know who ought to say things. What good did Simon do speaking, or Bill, or Walter? It's time some people knew they've got to keep quiet and leave deciding things to the rest of us." Ralph could no longer ignore his speech. The blood was hot in his cheeks. "You haven't got the conch," he said. "Sit down." Jack's face went so white that the freckles showed as clear brown flecks. He licked his lips and remained standing. "This is a hunter's job." The rest of the boys watched intently. Piggy, finding himself uncomfortably embroiled, slid the conch to Ralph's knees and sat down. The silence grew oppressive, and Piggy held his breath. "This is more than a hunter's job," said Ralph at last, "because you can't track the beast. And don't you want to be rescued?" He turned to the assembly. "Don't you all want to be rescued?" He looked back at Jack. "I said before, the fire is the main thing. Now the fire must be out." The old exasperation saved him and gave him the energy to attack. "Hasn't anyone got any sense? We've got to relight that fire. You never thought of that, Jack, did you? Or don't any of you want to be rescued?" Yes, they wanted to be rescued. There was no doubt about that. And with a violent swing to Ralph's side, the crisis passed. Piggy let out his breath with a gasp, reached for it again, and failed. He lay against a log, his mouth gaping, blue shadows creeping round his lips. Nobody minded him. "Now think, Jack. Is there anywhere on the island you haven't been?" Unwillingly, Jack answered. "There's only... But of course, you remember? The tail-end part where the rocks are all piled up. I've been near there. The rock makes a sort of bridge. There's only one way up. And the thing might live there." All the assembly talked at once. "Quiet. All right. That's where we'll look.
"If the beast isn't there, we'll go up the mountain and look, and light the fire. Let's go."
"We'll eat first, then go." Ralph paused. "We'd better take spears."
After they had eaten, Ralph and the Biggins set out along the beach. They left Piggy propped up on the platform. This day promised, like the others, to be a sunbath under a blue dome. The beach stretched away before them in a gentle curve till perspective drew it into one with the forest. For the day was not advanced enough to be obscured by the shifting veils of mirage. Under Ralph's direction, they picked a careful way along the palm terrace rather than dare the hot sand down by the water. He let Jack lead the way, and Jack trod with theatrical caution, though they could have seen an enemy 20 yards away. Ralph walked in the rear, thankful to have escaped responsibility for a time. Simon, walking in front of Ralph, felt a flicker of incredulity. A beast with claws that scratched, that sat on a mountain top, that left no tracks, and yet was not fast enough to catch Sam and Eric. However Simon thought of the beast, there rose before his inward sight the picture of a human at once heroic and sick. He sighed. Other people could stand up and speak to an assembly, apparently, without that dreadful feeling of the pressure of personality, could say what they would as though they were speaking to only one person. He stepped aside and looked back. Ralph was coming along, holding his spear over his shoulder. Diffidently, Simon allowed his pace to slacken until he was walking side by side with Ralph and looking up at him through the coarse black hair that fell now to his eyes. Ralph glanced sideways, smiled constrainedly as though he had forgotten that Simon had made a fool of himself, then looked away again at nothing. For a moment or two Simon was happy to be accepted, and then he ceased to think about himself. When he bashed into a tree, Ralph looked sideways impatiently and Robert sniggered. Simon reeled, and a white spot on his forehead turned red and trickled. Ralph dismissed Simon and returned to his personal hell. They would reach the castle sometime, and the chief would have to go forward. Jack came trotting back. "We're in sight now." "All right, we'll get as close as we can." He followed Jack towards the castle where the ground rose slightly. On their left was an impenetrable tangle of creepers and trees. Why couldn't there be something in that? "Because you can see. Nothing goes in or out." "What about the castle, then?" "Look." Ralph parted the screen of grass and looked out. There were only a few more yards of stony ground, and then the two sides of the island came almost together, so that one expected a peak of headland. But instead of this, a narrow ledge of rock, a few yards wide and perhaps 15 long, continued the island out into the sea. There lay another of those pieces of pink squareness that underlay the structure of the island. This side of the castle, perhaps 100 feet high, was the pink bastion they had seen from the mountain top. The rock of the cliff was split, and the top littered with great lumps that seemed to totter. Behind Ralph, the tall grass had filled with silent hunters. Ralph looked at Jack. "You're a hunter." Jack went red. "I know. All right." Something deep in Ralph spoke for him. "I'm chief. I'll go. Don't argue." He turned to the others. "You, hide here. Wait for me." He found his voice tended either to disappear or to come out too loud. He looked at Jack. "Do you think?" Jack muttered. "I've been all over. It must be here." "I see," Simon mumbled confusedly. "I don't believe in the beast." Ralph answered him politely, as if agreeing about the weather. "No, I suppose not." His mouth was tight and pale. He put back his hair very slowly. "Well, so long." He forced his feet to move, until they had carried him out onto the neck of land. He was surrounded on all sides by chasms of empty air,
There was nowhere to hide, even if one did not have to go on. He paused on the narrow neck and looked down. Soon, in a matter of centuries, the sea would make an island of the castle. On the right hand was the lagoon, troubled by the open sea, and on the left, Ralph shuddered. The lagoon had protected them from the Pacific, and for some reason only Jack had gone right down to the water on the other side. Now he saw the landsman's view of the swell, and it seemed like the breathing of some stupendous creature. Slowly the waters sank among the rocks, revealing pink tables of granite, strange growths of coral, polyp, and weed. Down, down the water went, whispering like the wind among the heads of the forest. There was one flat rock there, spread like a table, and the waters sucking down on the four weedy sides made them seem like cliffs. Then the sleeping leviathan breathed out. The waters rose, the weeds streamed, and the water boiled over the table rock with a roar. There was no sense of the passage of waves, only this minute-long fall and rise and fall. Ralph turned away to the red cliff. They were waiting behind him in the long grass, waiting to see what he would do. He noticed that the sweat in his palm was cool now, realized with surprise that he did not really expect to meet any beast, and didn't know what he would do about it if he did. He saw that he could climb the cliff, but this was not necessary. The squareness of the rock allowed a sort of plinth round it, so that to the right, over the lagoon, one could inch along a ledge and turn the corner out of sight. It was easy going, and soon he was peering round the rock. Nothing but what you might expect. Pink, tumbled boulders, with guano layered on them like icing, and a steep slope up to the shattered rocks that crowned the bastion. A sound behind him made him turn. Jack was edging along the ledge. "Couldn't let you do it on your own." Ralph said nothing. He led the way over the rocks, inspected a sort of half-cave that held nothing more terrible than a clutch of rotten eggs, and at last sat down, looking round him and tapping the rock with the butt of his spear. Jack was excited. What a place for a fort! A column of spray wetted them. No fresh water. What's that, then? There was indeed a long green smudge halfway up the rock. They climbed up and tasted the trickle of water. You could keep a coconut shell there, filling all the time. Not me. This is a rotten place. Side by side, they scaled the last height to where the diminishing pile was crowned by the last broken rock. Jack struck the near one with his fist, and it grated slightly. "Do you remember?" Consciousness of the bad times in between came to them both. Jack talked quickly. "Shove a palm trunk under that, and if an enemy came, look." 100 feet below them was the narrow causeway, then the stony ground, then the grass dotted with heads, and behind that the forest. "One heave," cried Jack, exulting, "and whee!" He made a swooping movement with his hand. Ralph looked towards the mountain. "What's the matter?" Ralph turned. "Why?" "You were looking. I don't know how." "There's no signal now, nothing to show." "You're nuts on the signal." The taut blue horizon encircled them, broken only by the mountain top. "That's all we've got." He leaned his spear against the rocking stone and pushed back 2 handfuls of hair. "We'll have to go back and climb the mountain. That's where they saw the beast." "The beast won't be there. What else can we do?" The others, waiting in the grass, saw Jack and Ralph unharmed and broke cover into the sunlight. They forgot the beast in the excitement of exploration. They swarmed across the bridge and soon were climbing and shouting. Ralph stood now, one hand against an enormous red block, a block large as a mill wheel that had been split off and hung tottering. Somberly he watched the mountain. He clenched his fist and beat hammer-wise on the red wall at his right. His lips were tightly compressed, and his eyes yearned beneath the fringe of hair. "Smoke." He sucked his bruised fist.
"Jack, come on." But Jack was not there. A knot of boys, making a great noise that he had not noticed, were heaving and pushing at a rock. As he turned, the base cracked, and the whole mass toppled into the sea, so that a thunderous plume of spray lapped halfway up the cliff. "Stop it! Stop it!" His voice struck a silence among them. Smoke. A strange thing happened in his head. Something flittered there in front of his mind, like a bat's wing, obscuring his idea. Smoke. At once the ideas were back in the anger. "We want smoke, and you go wasting your time. You roll rocks." Roger shouted. "We got plenty of time." Ralph shook his head. "We'll go to the mountain." The clamour broke out. Some of the boys wanted to go back to the beach. Some wanted to roll more rocks. The sun was bright, and danger had faded with the darkness. "Jack, the beast might be on the other side. You can lead again. You've been." "We could go by the shore. There's fruit." Bill came up to Ralph. "Why can't we stay here for a bit?" "That's right. Let's have a fort." "There's no food here," said Ralph, "and no shelter, not much fresh water. This'd make a wizard fort. We can roll rocks right onto the bridge." "I say we'll go on," shouted Ralph furiously. "We've got to make certain we'll go now. Let's stay here. Back to the shelter. I'm tired." "No." Ralph struck the skin off his knuckles. They did not seem to hurt. "I'm chief. We've got to make certain. Can't you see the mountain? There's no signal showing. There may be a ship out there. Are you all off your rockers?" Mutinously, the boys fell silent or muttering. Jack led the way down the rock and across the bridge.